Was I on during any of that? Okay, let's start over. Good morning. Good to be with you this morning. As soon as Mike gets back, we're going to get in a catalog and we're going to find a new microphone. We have three to choose from back there, and apparently none of them like me for some reason. I hope you've enjoyed your holiday weekend. I have been alone for mine for most of it. My family's in Nebraska visiting the in-laws. They're out on the farm for the week. So far, David has worked on learning how to drive. The next day, they went to a demolition derby. I've been told those things are unrelated. They've seen fireworks. They've been to the city pool. But they missed the earthquake that we all survived. So not quite as exciting as our lives. And I have found on the days that I had off that if I got in busy and did something, that I quit feeling lonely and sad and remembering my family wasn't there and got to see things. So in the last several days, I have seen Multnomah Falls. I have seen Mount Hood. I've seen the gorge up on the Columbia River. And then I've been down the southern part of the coast and seen four lighthouses and a bunch of elk and almost made it to California before I decided to turn around and come back. So I have put some miles on my wife's car while she's gone. But it's been fun, but I'm ready for them to get back on Wednesday. So all will be well then. If you'd like to turn in your Bible to John chapter 11. John chapter 11. Now about the first 16 verses or so will be on the screen, but once we pass that point, you'll need your Bible to follow along. I decided that there's a thought that's going to roll from 16 on that I'd just like to keep up here on the screen, and you have that in your mind as we continue on. So beginning in verse 1. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." And I like how she calls him the one you love, because it gives us a little insight into Jesus that he is about more than just having come to heaven to have a job to do. He's more than just task-oriented, and it's more than just the disciples that he interacts with. He has other people along the way that he loved. And he had several home bases that he would kind of work out of, and one of those bases was the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. These are people who were close to him, people that he cared about, which will make what happens next kind of interesting and unusual. When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God, for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed there where he was for two more days. Then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." And the question that might come to us is, why wait? Why wait those extra 2 days if you know that someone you care about, someone who's described as the one that you love, is sick? Why would you not want to go and be with him? It wasn't a terrible distance away. And yet, for whatever reason, he decides to stay here for two more days. Now, the way that God times things in our lives is sometimes difficult to accept. We have something different in mind. We have a way we would like things to go, and yet God's timing is perfect. "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you were going back." The disciples see danger. When Jesus finally comes around and decides, okay, it's been 2 days, but let's go now, they see a situation they don't want to get into. They see something that is dangerous. If you were in class this morning, we saw something very similar with Paul. And Paul in Acts 21 was wanting to go to Jerusalem, and everyone around him kept trying to talk him out of it because they knew it would be dangerous for him, and yet he knew he had to go. Jesus wanted to go, and his disciples instead just didn't see what he saw. Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light." After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." I'm going. It doesn't matter that you say that it's dangerous. It doesn't matter that we're concerned about it. It doesn't matter what people there may want to do to me. I am going to go. And yet he still speaks to them in this language about Lazarus falling asleep, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to them. His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I'm glad I was not there so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Then Thomas, also known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." Now, I've read this from Thomas for my whole life, and I have thought of this as the most courageous moment of Thomas. And I have thought of this as this moment of defiance, that I am going to stand in the face of death, and I will go with you to your death, if that's what you call me to do, Jesus. Recently, I've been challenged by a friend of mine who reads this more in the voice of Eeyore. If you can remember Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh and the excitement that he said everything in, it's almost a defeated Thomas that says, "Well, let's go with you and we'll all die with him." You could read this either way, and you could make something totally different out of it in either direction, but Thomas still sees what the disciples have seen here, which is this is not going to go well if we go there. And if he's already dead, now we really don't have as much reason to go there, but we'll go along. And all of this happens so that you may believe. That's what Jesus says. I wonder today in our lives how many things happen so that we may believe. How many people do we encounter? How many situations do we run into? How many times do we find ourselves questioning God's timing or God's plan? And those things come together so that we may believe. Picking up in verse 17, and I'd like you to keep that thought in your mind as we continue on. These things happening so that we may believe. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. It's interesting as you see the personalities of these two ladies coming out. You may remember other stories of them where Martha is busy working, and Mary is busy listening. And Martha gets annoyed by that. Martha is task-driven. And Mary wants to hear what Jesus has to say. Mary anoints his feet. Mary is so concerned with Jesus, while Martha, there's a job to be done here. And I think we could see ourselves in some of those things, can't we? There are those of us here who are very task-driven, very job-driven, and others who would just like to sit back and see more people. And it takes both of those groups of people to make things happen, doesn't it? It takes Mary and Martha both to make these gatherings that they're a part of happen. Martha comes out to meet him. Mary stays behind. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know even now that God will give you whatever you ask." If you had been here. How many times do we find ourselves in situations in life that are not going according to plan, and we wonder where God is? How many times do we find ourselves after those things have happened and we're trying to pick up the pieces and put it back together, thinking to ourselves, "God, if you had only been here, if you had only been here." Martha is confused. And you've got to understand, this is the same Martha who sends word out that Lazarus is sick. This is the same Martha that knows what Jesus can do, knows how he can heal, knows that he could come here and heal. He could do it in an amazing way, or he could just send word back with somebody that he is going to be healed and I'm not even going to come there to do it. This is the Jesus she reached out to, and instead she got the message back that not now. Not going to come now. And then he shows up later after Lazarus is gone, and her first thought is, if you'd just been here. If you'd been here, none of this would happen, but I still know that God will do whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again. Your brother will rise again." And she takes that in the way that so many of us would take that, is when we suffer loss and we talk about there being a better place, we talk about heaven, we talk about that kind of a resurrection, and yet Jesus has something very different in mind. Jesus says to her in verse 25, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies, and whoever lives and believes in me will never die." Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she told him, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world. Still not quite on the same page, are they? She knows the idea of a resurrection. She knows the idea that life is not just what it is here, and yet she doesn't quite get what he's saying. In verse 28, it says, after she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and he's asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. If you had been here. And I start to realize, as their words are the same words, for days they have probably been sitting in that house mourning. And their conversation has consisted of an awful lot of, if he had just been here, why didn't he come? Our brother could still be here if he would have just, we called for him, if he would have just come then, we wouldn't be here mourning. If he had just been here. And they have so struggled for days now with this idea of why, when he heals strangers, would he not come heal someone he loves? Why does it have to be this way? And they find themselves asking all those questions that we ask today. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do we see people around us prosper while we struggle? Why is there a Saudi prince that has $38 billion to do something with in the first place? Why do the wealthy have their wealth? Why do the poor struggle the way that they do? Why? And she says, if you had just been here, he would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Jesus truly cared about these people. And I believe that that continues on for us. God looks into our lives and truly does care about the junk that we're dealing with. He cares about the things that have knocked us off our feet. He cares about the times we feel lost. He cares about the times that we question and wonder and ask where he is and why he didn't do things differently. He cares about all of those things. And Jesus here is deeply troubled in spirit, and he is moved. And it says, where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. And Jesus wept. He was moved to the point of tears in all of this. Now, it's interesting that he knows where this story is going, and most of us who have heard this before know where this story is going, and yet he still understands and is bothered by their loss. He still knows their sorrow. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Could he not have stopped the loss in my family? Could he not have stopped this sickness in its tracks? Could he not take care of this overwhelming debt that I'm trying to deal with? Could he not work in this situation? Why does he choose to work in this one and not in this one? And they begin to talk among themselves and say, he heals people. That's what he does. Why not here? Why not with someone that he cares about? Jesus, once more deeply moved in verse 38, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. Now, if you remember back on Easter, when we talked about the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus, think about, as Jesus approaches this tomb, all the emotions and thoughts probably going through his mind. So he's asking for a stone to be rolled out of the way. He's looking there at a place where life ends, knowing what faces him not very far down the road. And here he stands before this tomb. He asks them to remove the stone. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. Now, this is the same Martha that several verses ago said, I know that you can do whatever God will do whatever you ask him to do. You can still do something here. But yet she is task-oriented Martha, thinking of the logistics now. Oh, this is not going to be pleasant if we roll this stone away. This is not what we do here. And he says, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? All these things are going to happen so that you may believe. And I wonder today, do we see enough of the glory of God in our lives? Because all these things that happen in our lives, could they also be happening so that we may believe? As John uses this phrase, so that you may believe, if you go to the end of his book and he talks about why he wrote this book, he said that if he wrote of all the things of Jesus, it would fill all the books in the world. But he wrote these things so that we may believe. These things are here so that we may believe. And they are about to see something incredible. So they took away the stone in verse 41. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. He gives glory to God. He refocuses them all in on where this is coming from in the first place, that this is not just him, that this is by the Father's power that this is happening. He takes the moment, even though he knows this and God knows that he knows this, to say it so that the people around him can see it. When we face these situations of loss, of struggle, are they opportunities for the people around us to see where we turn, how we handle it? And are we okay with that? We talked about the blind man a couple chapters back last week. All of those things in his life happening so that God could be glorified on that day. Are we okay with that? Are we okay with our struggles being used for the glory of God? So he says this so that we may believe. When he said this, in verse 43, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. Now, I have heard it said, and this is definitely not from the text, but I love the idea of it. I have heard it said that there are those who wonder, why say Lazarus? Why the name? And there is a theory out there in the scholarly world that perhaps the name was said so that everyone else wouldn't come too. Because this is the power that he has. He has just told Martha several verses back, he is the resurrection and the life. And he could just go tomb by tomb by tomb by tomb and bring them all out, if that's what he had in mind. But he's just looking for one today, just the one. And he says, Lazarus, come out. Now imagine for a moment yourself there. We've had a tough week here at the church, memorializing a couple very sweet ladies in the last week. I've been to a lot of funerals in the course of life, more than I'd care to think of. Been in a lot of cemeteries, watched a lot of people being lowered into the ground. I've never seen anything remotely like this. And I try to imagine what it would be like in one of those cemeteries for Jesus to walk in and name a person and say, come out, and for that to actually happen. As he says, Lazarus, come out, the combination of silence and maybe a little bit of a murmur of what in the world is he doing? This is not okay. These people, they're struggling with this loss now. I don't know what he's doing, but this is, or other people just on the edge of their seat wondering what's about to happen. People looking into the tomb, and I imagine even in the day that you're going to have a stone that has been rolled away and this opening and kind of a shadowy area back in there where you can't really see very well from the brightness outside to the darkness inside, and people just staring at that opening wondering what is about to happen. And he says in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped in strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Still wrapped the way they had done days ago, he walks out of that tomb. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. If you had asked Mary and Martha that morning before Jesus showed up, what will today be like? I'm going to list, if you, I guess if you had them list 1,000 things that could happen today, this is not on the list. Never would have imagined that everything that happened over the last 4 days, and even in the period before when they called for Jesus and wanted Lazarus to be healed, that it would all lead up to this day and what Jesus would do. And yet here he is doing the impossible. I don't know what you thought getting up this morning God had in mind for you. I don't know if you thought he would use you in a very unique way to do something. I don't know if you just expected this to be another Sunday and you're looking forward to the nap this afternoon. I don't know if your stomach is already grumbling as you think about lunch. Could this be the day that God does something amazing in your life or in my life? And yes, it could. Or could it be tomorrow, or could it be the next day? Could he do it through blessings in the way that we see blessings? Yes, he can. Can he do it through difficulties in the way that we see difficulties and struggles? Yes, he can. Does Satan get in our way and throw struggles at us sometimes? Absolutely. I'm sure he does. But occasionally, might God throw some of those struggles our way too, to give us the opportunity to glorify him? Yes, he can. And so Jesus speaks, and Lazarus walks out of the tomb, and there is great rejoicing from everybody, except in verse 45, many of the Jews who came to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did, they put their faith in him, but some of them went to the Pharisees. If you saw this person come out of the tomb still wrapped in those grave wrappings, or today as we would see it, you saw them coming out in that suit or that dress that had been planned for that. The excitement, the amazement, everything that should go with that, I'm going to tell the story of what I've seen for the rest of my life, and yet there are still some people that instead of just being amazed, they go to the Pharisees. They told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting. They called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here is a man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. If we just let this happen, everybody's going to believe. Which, by the way, is what John said the point was, and what Jesus said the point was. He's going to do all these things so that we can believe. Then one of them, named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up. You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish. He did not say this on his own, but as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation. And not only for that nation, but also the scattered children of God, to bring them together and make them one. So from that day on, they plotted to take his life. They plotted to take the life of the man that has just proved he has power over death. Great plan. Makes no sense at all. And isn't it interesting that he prophesies that this one, as he dies, will bring everyone together. And Caiaphas was actually right, but not in the way that he thought he would be. So therefore, they plotted to take his life. So Jesus no longer moved around publicly among the Jews, in verse 54. Instead, he withdrew to a region near the desert, to a village called Ephraim, where he stayed with his disciples. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, many went up from the country to Jerusalem for their ceremonial cleansing before the Passover. They kept looking for Jesus as they stood in the temple area and asked one another, "What do you think? Isn't he coming to the feast at all?" But the chief priests and Pharisees had given orders that if anyone found out where Jesus was, he should report it so that they may arrest him. And all of these things happen so that you may believe. Jesus has the power to heal, but in this case chooses not to heal. Not because of a lack of compassion, not because he likes to see people suffer, but because he's going to show his power in an even larger way. As we go through our struggles this week, whatever they may be, have you considered that God is just waiting to show his power in an even larger way than we can imagine, so that we can believe and so that those around us can believe? why Paul can later write, "Rejoice in the Lord always," and again I say rejoice. That's why we can read later on in the New Testament that we could consider it pure joy when we face trials of many kinds. Because we know that God has a plan that is bigger than our struggles and bigger than our blessings. He is a God that can work in anything. This morning, I would imagine each of us have struggles of some kind or another. And I hope as we consider them this morning that we can see God and his ability to work in those. If there are things that we can pray about with you, things that we can help with, or if you would like to take on Christ in baptism and follow him for the first time, please come and we stand and sing.